Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
We are special breakfast people here at Pantsuit Politics, but not just when Beth and I are on the road. The truth is, I want something warm from the oven every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. It's just the truth. It makes it feel special, makes it feel exciting. I don't want to work at it. So the first time I ever saw Wild Grain, which is Bake from Frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries, I was obsessed. You guys, I've been a member for over a year. It's amazing. It's so easy. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. You can fully customize your Wild Grain box. You can choose any combination of breads, pastas, pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit to start your subscription. Sometimes I make one single croissant just for me because I want to feel special and they're so good. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit. That's wildgrain.com/pantsuit, or you can use promo code pantsuit at checkout.
We're still enjoying our birthday and hearing from listeners all over the world.
Today we're responding to listener feedback and asking whether it's worth talking politics with your family.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
New shouting, new insults, plenty of nuance.
It's our birthday week still, so if you want to give us presents, I've previously mentioned that I love presents. They can come in the form of an iTunes review, a follow on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, or you can visit pantsuitpoliticsshow.com and become a supporter of the show. We have a new all-star subscriber, Ashley. Thank you so much, Ashley, and an incredibly generous contribution from Kristen. So thank you guys so much for all the awesome support and reviews.
Sarah, how are you feeling today?
I mean, I'm good. I'm sort of breaking up with Nate Silver. Like, I'm like a little, he's just being so careful. And we've just built this relationship in which I go to Nate Silver and he makes me feel better. And he is really not holding up his end of the relationship. And so I've broken up with him and moved on to the podcasters at Keeping It 1600, John Favreau, and the other guys from Obama's team. And also the New York Times statistic guy who still has her like 86% more likely to win. So that's just where I'm at right now. Like, if you are not holding up into the bargain, then we just go and break up for a little while.
Do you have legitimate concerns about this?
I mean, I just want, it's like my friend Laura says, like, I want a landslide, but we don't need a landslide. But I just, I mean, I guess not. I don't know. Anything could happen. No, I don't think that America will elect Donald Trump. No, I think that we're just, people are coming home and, you know, we're going to be, it's going to be a reasonable, her, you know, her lead has been between 4 and 7 points. And it's probably just getting back to the reasonable margin of her lead, but I don't know. I got to stop reading all this poll stuff.
I think this expression about Republicans coming home is so interesting. And I can't decide if I find it insulting, if I really get it. I don't know. I think I'm listening to it with this very sharp ear every day, because I think, what does that mean to me as a Republican when I'm being told to come home? What does that mean to me? And I get that there's an element of it's becoming real now. Like, we're having, as Republicans, we're having to reckon with the fact that we're probably going to have Hillary Clinton as president. We think that is preferable to Donald Trump, but we still hate it. And so I understand, especially when you think about the down ballot, this sense of like, come on, y'all, like, let's not go crazy here. But it seems like a really measured way to try to convince people that everything Donald Trump has done for the past year and a half isn't frightening.
Well, I should also say that I did not cry, at least election related today. I had plenty of real life things to cry about. I went to the funeral of a very wonderful man, and a service of reflection from our race unity group. So I cried, but not about anything patriotic or Hillary related today. I guess that's progress. So I had a question for you before we started recording. You said we mentioned something about Twitter, about Benghazi something, ambassador. And I made a remark, and you said, you left out a very heavy sigh, and you said, I don't want a Hillary fight. And I don't know what that means, and I don't know what you would like me to say when something comes up about Hillary.
Well, what I don't want is to have unproductive conversations about Hillary Clinton, and I do feel like often we have unproductive conversations about Hillary Clinton, because I look, and you know, we got a very negative iTunes review today about the fact that neither of us go at her very hard. And I was thinking about this because I do have very harsh criticisms of Hillary Clinton. I don't enjoy or find it useful to express those. One, I never want to overstate things, because I think that part of our political culture disintegrating is that we overstate everything. I posted what I thought was a really well done article from National Review on our social media today, where they talked about how in trying to characterize Donald Trump as the worst of the worst, you realize that Democrats have sort of run out of awful things to say about Republicans. And it points out that a lot of what President Obama said yesterday in North Carolina about Donald Trump, he said about Mitt Romney. And now it's like Mitt Romney is a statesman because he lost. And Donald Trump is truly terrible, but all those things have been said. So I don't want to do that about Hillary Clinton. I don't want to resort to language that is so extreme that it renders things that really are very extreme meaningless. The other thing, though, is like, I just know where you are on this. I think we can still have some discussions, but like, what is the point of a really tense exchange at this moment? And I think that's, you know, some of it for me is my energy level. But you don't want to hear me talk about Hillary Clinton and WikiLeaks emails and Benghazi, and a lot of our listeners don't either. And I, if we do, I won't go far enough for the people who want to hear her be criticized, and I'll go too far for the people who don't. And so to me, the interesting questions now are, how do we move forward, given that this is where we're going to be?
Well, and I think that, you know, that's sort of what I said, you know, what are we talking about at this point when we engage with if we engage with people about politics? Like, I did have a very good conversation with my stepfather recently when we were talking about this stuff, but it wasn't really a sort of a Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump debate. And I just really don't know what people want me to say about Hillary. Like, I guess at this point, yeah, I don't know what the answer people are looking for. Like, what, you know, Hillary Clinton is a flawed human being. She is also the most over-examined presidential candidate, perhaps, we've ever said. Like, all these things are true simultaneously. And it's just like, I'm kind of at the point where, like, if people criticize her or point out something, like, I just want to be like, well, what do you want? What do you want her to do? Like, do you want her to divorce Bill Clinton? Do you want her to come out and say everything, you know, I was wrong about this, you know, 4 days before the election? Like, it's such a weird space to be in when you support a candidate as passionately as I do, because I don't want to give the impression that I think Hillary Clinton is superhuman or, you know, not flawed. I hold, you know, she's, of course she's flawed, you know, but I don't know what people want me to say at this point, I guess, is where I'm at. Like, I don't want to defend her and sound like I'm burying my head in the sand. But at a certain point, like, but I also feel like we, you know, Vox has been doing a ton of stuff on, like, they're really pushing hard this idea of, like, no one is, again, we're still, we've lost track of how serious Donald Trump, what a serious threat he is. And, you know, I don't really think that that is because, I don't know if I buy the argument that we were saying the same things about Mitt Romney. I think there's some truth to that, but I also think there's truth that the truth in that is that Donald Trump didn't spring forth full formed, and that the leadership of the Republican Party holds responsibility for his candidacy because of some decisions that were probably being criticized when they were, Mitt Romney was running for president. So policy positions and campaigning approaches. But anyway, back, yeah, I don't really know what any of us are talking about. You know, I guess we'd also just need to, you know, be with our people and either sweat the results or, I think it would be a productive exercise to think about what we do next. And while I love the idea of reconciliation, I mean, I was at a race unity group just before this, like, I do not know what we can do at this point about people who think Hillary Clinton is the devil and smells of sulfur. I mean, what do you do when people are literally saying things like that?
Well, I think that's why it's important to have conversations. When you say, what do you want from me? I mean, I think I don't need anything from you on this topic. We all just are where we are. I do feel strongly that some acknowledgement of legitimate concerns and legitimate patterns and legitimate fears about the kinds of people she'll surround herself with in office would be nice, because there are things in Hillary Clinton's past that seem to also be in her present that could carry into the future. And so we can all say she is the superior choice of these choices. But let's go into this and have learned some things and not repeat those mistakes. That would be helpful, I think. Because the problem is, I don't think Hillary Clinton is the devil, and I think that should be clear to anybody who listens to our podcast. But when the immediate response to criticism of Hillary Clinton, or even what you just said about Mitt Romney and the Republican leadership bearing responsibility for Donald Trump because of things that happened in the Romney campaign, I mean, that is a really kind of harsh way to take this. And so I think there can't be reconciliation if the camps are, look, Hillary Clinton is flawed, but we're not going to talk about it because Donald Trump is so awful and because she's still great. And on the Republican side, Donald Trump is so awful and y'all have been cruising toward this awfulness for years and years and years. And what are we going to do now? Like, I don't know where is the reconciliation when those are the only conversations that are happening? So with an eye toward going forward, I think we all have to say, look, either we're going to litigate the past until the cows come home, or we're all going to say, in the future, how do we have legitimate, respected opposition to anyone's perspective? Because we need that. We need legitimate. I mean, I was thinking, our listener Rachel sent us a tweet today, and she always kind of comes out of the blue at us with, like, really specific questions, and I love that about her because it keeps my mind going in a lot of directions. But she was asking about the bill that just came to the House floor from the Judiciary Committee that changes the standard of review on administrative law decisions. So asking courts, instead of deferring to administrative agencies' interpretations of rules, to take a fresh look to apply a de novo standard of review. And I thought, that should not be a partisan issue, right? Like, that is the kind of issue where reasonable liberal minds could differ on what the judicial standard of review should be. And reasonable conservative minds could differ. I mean, the Chevron doctrine, which is at issue in that case, is really built on what should be sort of a conservative interpretation that administrative agencies are a politically accountable branch of government. And so courts, which are not politically accountable, should defer to those agencies' interpretations. But because the way our government is functioning now, conservatives are saying no, courts should take a fresh look because administrative agencies have run amok. And so that's like, that is the kind of issue that to me points out the importance of getting back to having serious conversations about governance. And I hope that we are all able to do that. My fear as a conservative right now is that there is so little respect for anyone who's ever touched the Republican Party from the Democratic side, that we're not going to be able to come back to a healthy place. Because when I feel myself reacting, and I have not once ever considered voting for Donald Trump, I know that the language is getting to a point where it's going to be hard for all of us to bounce back from this election. If you're looking for a very quick salon quality but not salon priced manicure, Olive & June has you covered. We've talked about Olive & June's Mani system before. It has everything that you need for a professional manicure in one box. Salon grade tools, your choice of six polishes. Those polishes are going to last you for 7 days or more. The cost breaks down to about $2 a manicure. Olive & June also has press-ons if you want. What I love, though, is that Olive & June each season is coming out with new colors, and I just got a set of spring and summer colors in quick dry polish. And they say this dries in about a minute. It seemed dry to me in about 30 seconds. It was not kidding about being quick dry. I also love the light colors in this set. There is a huge range. My favorite one is called Kitten. It's like a pinkish gray. The quick dry polish gives you full coverage in one or two coats. It lasts for more than 5 days, and it is offered in more than 40 cruelty-free and vegan polishes. Olive & June just understands what's happening in our lives, that we need to move quickly, but we want to look great and feel great and have fun in the process. Visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system.
Just finished A Court of Thorns and Roses and craving another fantasy world to devour? Dipsy's got you. Dive into spicy enemies to lovers' tales or embark on an epic romance between immortal fae and sworn foes. They've got fantasy romance stories perfect for your morning walk, late night, or long bath. Dipsy is an app full of short, spicy audio stories. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups. And there's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency era historical fiction, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. dipsystories.com/pantsuit. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Can I get something off my chest? Every day I feel a little pang of sadness because I think about Griffin going away to college. Y'all, he's a freshman in high school. This is not healthy or normal. This is why I have it on my list of things to talk to my therapist about. We all carry around these things, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us. Therapy is a safe space to get these things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. You gotta get it off your chest. And you can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pantsuit.
What do you think that responsibility, what what responsibility should the Republican Party take for Donald Trump?
I don't know how to answer that. I think that it's sort of like asking what responsibility should the Democratic Party take for Hillary Clinton. I mean, I don't hold the Democratic Party responsible for any of the things that I see as problematic about Hillary Clinton. I think that the Tea Party constituency really started to change the Republican Party. I think that the a very small subset of the community of faith really started to change the Republican Party in ways that created so much fracturing among the coalition that voted Republican that it's hard to grapple with. And I do think there has been a failure of leadership in the Republican Party over the past few years. I think it's very, very problematic that we had this public autopsy process to say, how should the party be positioning itself in the future? And instead of working in that direction, everybody said, well, that was interesting. Let's keep doing what we do. So are there problems in the Republican Party? Absolutely. Part of the problem stems from the fact that it maybe was too big of a tent. You know, maybe there are too many people with too many different ideological persuasions sharing space. I know that my views don't at all resemble the views of lots of Republicans. So there are issues for sure. But to tag all of us who believe things that really have no connection to what Donald Trump believes at all. Like I've said before, even if you erase everything about Donald Trump that many of us think is dangerous or racist or misogynist or fill in the blank, I still don't have a candidate in Donald Trump because he wants to drastically expand the reach of the federal government. So when I hear, what responsibility do Republicans have for Donald Trump? I think, well, there are a lot of Republicans who have no responsibility for Donald Trump. And there are some who do. And there is an issue in our primary process that got us here. There is an issue with the current leadership of the party that got us here. But I am not willing to say, yeah, the way that I have voted for the past couple of decades gave rise to Donald Trump. I'm certainly not willing to say that Mitt Romney had anything to do with Donald Trump.
I mean, I think that I've been thinking about this a lot. I've been thinking about, I'd like to read more about reconciliation processes that have happened in other countries. I think that for better or for worse, and I'm not defending the entirety of anger and frustration that many, many Democrats feel towards the Republican Party. But, you know, I think that the Republican leadership was strategic. It was, we will feed the Tea Party. We will use the Tea Party to our advantage. And we will use racist birther movements. And we will sit idly by while people scream at the president during the State of the Union, you're a liar. And all these really incredibly disrespectful things. And I just, and, you know, we talked about this before, Mitch McConnell standing up and saying, my only job is to make sure he doesn't get anything accomplished. And I just don't know how a party, how I think that there's a huge population of people, you know, and my friend said to me the other day, I wouldn't vote for my own mother if she was a Republican. Now, my friend is gay. And for her, it's a deal breaker, and it's a deal breaker until she dies. And for people who heard Donald Trump say things, awful things about racists and see all this alt-right stuff, and it's really unfair. It's unfair to people like you said, that I shouldn't be held responsible because I voted Republican for all these awful things. But I just think that there's this huge population of people who feel assaulted to the very core of who they are, be it gay, be it black, be it female, by subsets of the Republican Party or the Republican leadership or choices. And I don't know how you get people to move past that. And maybe there's a way. I'm sure South Africa dealt with some really intense things, but it's like, I see these people's hurt, and I said at a group of liberal women in Paducah, I went there, I love them. And I said, like, you know, I believe in a loyal opposition. I do this twice a week. I think there's something to be found here. But they're just so hurt and so angry. And so they feel assaulted to their core. You know, I was listening to NPR and they were talking about, you know, this reporter was talking particularly about African-American voters. And this woman said she hears over and over again, like, African-Americans feel like if Trump wins, it will go back to like Jim Crow, like, you know. Stay polite and stay out of the way is the only way you'll be able to survive. Like, how do you get people past that? How do you get people past that to trust in a party again? It's not like parties don't flip. I mean, if you're talking about African-American voters and the Democrats, like, it can happen. But, oof, I think it might take a while.
Well, you certainly don't get people past it by feeding that all the time, which is part of what I feel coming from the Democratic Party, that everything in conservative ideology must be racist or sexist or homophobic or xenophobic. Like, when we are talking about policy differences that have nothing to do with keeping people from marrying or discrimination, there are a whole set of policies that Republicans have supported that I do not support. And we've talked at length about those on the show, and we'll continue to do that. But when you are looking at the entirety of the conservative position as representing things that are being labeled with an ism, that is not how you bring people back together. And I do think that the Democratic Party has exploited the problems in the Republican Party and don't give us an opportunity to be a principled opposition. Now, look, I'm not absolving or even trying to defend the Republican Party. I've talked a lot about how I don't know whether this is a party that I still belong in, because if it is the party of Trump, it's not my party. Like that, but I feel right now like there is such an assault on anyone who dares to disagree with Hillary Clinton or who dares to not label themselves a Democrat. I feel right now like the tone from Democrats is that if every state doesn't go blue and any person who doesn't vote for Hillary Clinton must fall into this basket of deplorables. And that is not a recipe to move forward. You know, so we took this criticism from an iTunes listener because I don't go after Hillary Clinton hard enough. I exercise restraint in my comments for a reason. It's because I do want to hear from people who disagree with me. I just would like some of that back from the other side. You know what I mean?
I mean, I do know how you mean, because that's how I felt for 8 years when George Bush was president. It's exactly how I know exactly how you feel, because it's how I felt when a Republican told me on the streets of Washington, D.C., after she met me 10 minutes before, that I hated America because I opposed the war on terror. I understand that, you know, like this great phrase that this American life, it was a libertarian guy from the Cato Institute. And he was talking about how the immigration numbers do not support any of the immigration narrative that has become sort of a driving force behind the Republican Party. This is a libertarian. And he said, you know, I go to these conservative gatherings and I say immigrants don't drive up the crime rate and immigrants help the economy. And I am booed out of the room. I'm accused of being a secret socialist liberal. And he said, I call it patriotically correct. If you don't fit the narrative, if you don't support the narrative that liberals are trying to destroy America, then you are patriotically incorrect and you don't love America and you just want to destroy our country. And so, yeah, I do know. I mean, I had somebody on Facebook, too. I told you on 2 days ago, tell me that I couldn't possibly care about the national debt or foreign policy because liberals were the exact cause of all these problems. So, I mean, I know how you feel. I feel at liberals and Democrats. I mean, I think that they feel that profoundly. They feel, but I think, you know, I guess where I would push back is that when you say you can shed that identity, you can shed that identity and you can say, you know, I'm not a Republican anymore. But for so many Democrats, the assault is not just on being a Democrat. It's on a part of their identity that they cannot shed.
But you going right there, that as the default position.
I'm just trying to explain.
I hear you, but I get that. And I think you know that I get that. And because
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the royal we.
But I am too, because I'm not talking about you either. But when the royal,
I mean,
we
I don't
Democrats,
think you would have told me I hated America.
I definitely would not have. So when the royal we of Democrats always take it to the place of Republicans hate everyone who's not white or male, it is impossible to bounce back from that. And I understand that Republicans have said horrific things about Democrats. And I understand that Republicans have made it sound like Democrats are godless, and that that's the worst thing that you can be, or that they hate the country or whatever. So listen, I fully get that we have all done this to each other. But right now we're in a moment where at least Democrats have the entirety of the media and the entirety of Hollywood. It is cool to be a Democrat now, right? It is, it's more socially acceptable to be a Democrat in academia, in all kinds of fields, than it is to be a Republican. And so I just think we all have to have a little bit of compassion for the other side. And that gets to this question that Liz asked us today by email about whether it's even worth having these conversations with family members. I think that's the only way to do this, right? Because if we can't talk to people where we know there's a baseline of relationship and love and support about these issues, how are we ever to get there with strangers? Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I'm 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. And they've even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit right. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
There's not much worse than a dry and itchy scalp. Also, when you get your hair colored and then it does not last as long as you and your stylist discussed, it could be that unfiltered, mineral-filled water is the culprit. Hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin, and about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered shower head. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase.
Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Well, and I also think what we're taught truly the war we need to reconcile from is the culture wars. And this is where the greatest damage was done, and it's sort of what I'm talking about. And the culture wars have sort of been hidden beneath the language of party. But I mean, I think that's what it is so much about, is shifting, you know, sort of the pluralist direction of our nation that many, many people don't like. And I mean, I had a really good conversation with my stepfather, and, you know, I felt like we got somewhere. I feel like it was positive. And, you know, I told him, like, I know that this is hard. I know it's hard to constantly think about what you're saying and who you're saying it to. And you don't get to just, you know, ride through on this benefit of the doubt that you're have good intentions anymore. But we can't go backwards. This is the way it has to be, and it's worth it in the end, and it's a positive movement for our culture. But I mean, he looked at me at one point and he was like, it's hard. I don't want to do that. Like, I don't, it's hard. I don't want to do it. And I think that that's, you know, stretching and pushing and thinking about, you know, reshaping everything you've ever thought about homosexuality because your son came out of the closet, and rethinking everything you thought about race because your child married a member of the opposite race, and now you have grandchildren. And I mean, I think all this stuff is happening at such a rapid clip in our society, and it's really, really hard. And I really believe what I mentioned yesterday about the Krista Tippett thing, that we're putting all the pressure on politics to have these conversations about our changing culture and our changing language and our changing values, at the same time that all these other community institutions that could really help us and give us the framework with which to do this are crumbling. You know, church used to be a good place where you could practice disagreeing with people, but people don't go to church anymore. And we had civic institutions where you had to be on boards, and, you know, try not to fall straight into everybody should move to Paducah, but like, I have to learn a lot to get along with people that are different than me. At the same time, everybody else seems to be going the direction I want to live around people that are just like me, or, you know, increasing number of people just live alone. And I don't, like, if we don't have these institutions and these cultural ways to practice working together and getting along and being a community, like, I wonder if this is what we're seeing, and we can put it in the basket of politics if we want, but I think it's something much bigger than that. And I think that's why people like J.D. Vance and Hillbilly Elegy have tapped on something, because it's more than that. It's way more than that.
It's absolutely more than that. And that, again, is why I think the conversations have to happen within our families. But the other thing I want to say about that, just as like an asterisk, though, is that there's a whole aspect of conservatism that feels all the same ways that you do about culture, right? That mm-hmm. I mean that we don't disagree very often on anything having to do with social issues, with immigration, or with the rights that are afforded to people of you know, different identities, because that to me is not what conservatism is about. And I think that that's what really gets to me, always being labeled with people for whom that is the big issue. And that's why, you know, maybe a split in the Republican Party is the right way to go.
That's what I was about to ask. Like, when is it like, you just got to go forget it?
Yeah. I don't know the answer to
that. You're more patient than me. I would have jumped ship a long time ago.
Well, here's why I haven't. Because how do you change it if you can't vote in primaries? Oof. You know, how do I get a different kind of candidate if I change my registration and I can't vote for that kind of candidate? You know what I mean? So that's part of it. But the thing that I wanted to say about, like, having these, I had sort of a realization today about having these discussions within our families. I love St. Francis of Assisi's prayer, and I was thinking about it today.
We read it at our race thing tonight.
Oh, did you? I just love it. And I love Sarah McLachlan's version of it. But anyway, I was thinking about how, you know, it says, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. And I got fixated on that verb, sow, because, like, of all the words that could be used, I think that's exactly the right one when you're thinking about reconciliation. Because it doesn't say, and this is what I feel is happening in some ways right now, it doesn't say, where there is hatred, let me rip it out of the ground by the roots and burn it and chastise it and then dump on top of it my version of love, right? And I think if we want to have these discussions with our family members and with our neighbors, sowing is the right way to do it. You know what I mean? Like, can you enter the conversation with the intention of just leaving behind a trace of something different that people can consider and that can eventually take root and grow? And I get how frustrating hearing that has to be for people who, as you said, feel to their core threatened right now or insulted or, you know, beaten down. I do think that is the path toward reconciliation, that you have to give it time and space and more kindness than it deserves sometimes.
Well, I think that is an excellent note to end on.
Well, we will be back again tomorrow, again. And it'll be very interesting to see what develops in this final weekend before the election. Thank you, as Sarah noted, for the iTunes reviews, the social media interactions, and supporting our show. And until tomorrow's episode, keep a nuance, y'all.